Raleigh Cole was the first president of APCUG and had an integral part in the founding, the creation of the structure, and subsequent legal and management issues of the organization. In this interview, we'll hear from Raleigh about his first user group experiences, about that nasty letter from IBM, and the events that led to the formation of APCUG. Raleigh tells about some of the early issues, such as the anti-copy protection campaign spearheaded by APCUG founder Jerry Schneider, and Jerry's efforts to have user groups designated as educational organizations and hence eligible for nonprofit status as opposed to being a trade association. He tells how Boston Computer Society President Jonathan Rotenberg helped solve the big group versus little group situation, the first APCUG board of directors, Gene Barlow and other vendors, and the role of Comdex. We then hear Raleigh's thoughts on the future of user groups, the future of large events like CES and Comdex, and finally, we'll hear why he always wears a suit.
Coming to you from the world-renowned Magnum Building on beautiful Payne Avenue in the heart of Cleveland, Ohio, it's the entrepreneur himself, Dan Hansen, bringing you the Great Lakes Geek Show.
Today we're speaking with Raleigh Cole, and Raleigh, besides being one of the founders of APCUG, was actually the first president of APCUG. Good morning, Raleigh.
Good morning.
Tell us about those early days, how the idea for an association of personal computer user groups came up.
A number of us had been active in user group movements for a while, mostly fairly local. We would start the group in our area because it was a bunch of local enthusiasts. Maybe someone had moved from another area, so he knew of a user group in another area, or had worked with a user group for another computer. In my case, out in Puget Sound, I actually started with an Osborne group that was started in Seattle because someone had had an experience with an Osborne group in the Bay Area. We also had a very active Apple group. This is back in the era of the Apple I and the Apple II that eventually became this huge commercial enterprise for mail order for Apple parts as sort of models for starting the what was then called the Pacific Northwest IBM PC user group. And we were operating reasonably independently of other groups for several years. We started, PC came out in 81, we started the group. I didn't start the group, but I started attending during the term of the first president in 82, with just some vague understanding that there were other groups in the world. We did participate in FidoNet, which for those of you that don't remember was sort of a system of bulletin boards where bulletin board A would call up bulletin board B late at night and exchange messages, and then those exchanged messages would be available to the local bulletin board system. So you could eventually, over a course of 2 or 3 days, get a message across the country, all nominally for free, because the various groups would support the long-distance calls from one bulletin board system to the other. This changed, began to change a bit when we got a nasty letter from IBM. And it was kind of a funny incident. We got this letter on what was obviously a 27th carbon copy of a dot matrix letter that said, gee, we notice you're using IBM in your name, and IBM is a licensed trademark of the IBM Corporation. Please stop using it. And there were exchanges every which way, and people getting upset, and some groups changing their name and so forth. I just told my group, you just wait, this will be fine. And sure enough, 3 or 4 weeks later, we got a letter on engraved stationery direct from IBM headquarters expressing their joy and gratitude for the fact that we were helping people learn how to use their computers. The net result of that was, though, we were much heightened awareness that there were a whole bunch of user groups and there were maybe some interests in common and some reason to work together. And IBM followed that up with an invitation to those people from user groups who were attending COMDEX to meet and discuss whether a national organization made any sense. This was in 1986. I was not at that meeting, but Larry Shaw from our group was and came back. I'm trying to remember. I think I was secretary treasurer and he was president at that time of the local group. And he came back and reported on that. It was interesting. We would see what would happen. And then in next year, we rotated offices around, and I was the president. Microsoft, this is 1987, invited leaders of their, what they call their 12 reference groups. I thought at the time it was the 12 largest groups, but that was just my sheer naivete. There were very many large groups I did not know about. This was just the 12 groups they used as a focus group. But anyway, it was a three-day session to trot out all their new products and get feedback, and they had what we called the administrative airhead track, where they pulled the presidents aside for a meeting or two to continue this discussion on whether it made sense for the user groups to work together on building some kind of common organization for their common interests. The other thing that I think was going on that we were aware of was there was a discussion over copy protection, whether software needed to have routines built into it that made it very hard to make backup copies. And we were aware, because it was a very prominent public activity, the Capital PC user group, whose president then was Jerry Schneider, was very outspoken on how you were interfering with honest users without really stopping piracy, and in fact persuaded, we think that had a hand of persuading what was then the Lotus Corporation to back off on some of its copy protection and some others to avoid starting it. Here again, giving us the lesson that maybe there were common interests and common issues we could work on.
Well, let me stop you there a second. I remember that the issue with the copy protection and, you know, involving Lotus and Borland as principal players. It seems that user groups, you know, you're an attorney. User groups have had traditionally stayed out of politics and policy pretty much. And as nonprofits, they have to stay away from some of those things. How did the user groups really get involved in this almost a corporate legal type issue?
Well, and this I think was actually one of the things user groups did well. They put it out as a user bill of rights. What it was reasonable, not by law, but by sort of fairness and a bargain and an economic return, what was reasonable for the user to expect from software vendors and frankly, some of what it was reasonable for software vendors to expect from users. And part of that was some recognition of that things that interfered with the honest use of the software and did not head off the dishonest use should not be outlawed. It wasn't an attempt to get legislation enacted at the state or federal level. It was an attempt to get firms to change their business policy. So it's all done in a business context, not a legal context. And at the same time, they took on some responsibility to educate users about why you would want to register your shareware, would want to pay for your commercial software, not make illegal copies. And while neither effort was really heavily emphasized, the idea that here was a responsible group of consumers working with what hopefully was a responsible group of software publishers on business issues, on economic issues rather than legal issues, we thought was relatively effective, in part because it did not call for federal or state legislation. It called on the economic actors to act reasonably and fairly towards each other.
So with basically the birth of the IBM PC in 81, unbeknownst to many of us, there were groups spreading up in almost every city, some kind of user group. And through this Microsoft event and some future events at COMDEX, you started realizing, yes, there are other groups just like us. And that's how APCUG started to formulate it in your mind. Is that it?
Well, and we have to credit, there was a founding genius. There was a single person who probably had the insight better than the rest of us and got the rest of us involved, and that was Jerry Schneider. Jerry Schneider had come out of the sort of political activism of the 60s. The stories t- told, and I never got actual direct confirmation, he was a speechwriter for Gene McCarthy and part of the Come Clean for Gene, and let's use political persuasion to change the world. And he then became, as a computer user, president of the Capital PC User Group, the one in the Washington, D.C. area, which was very large, and got involved in this issue on user rights and copy protection, and on a major effort to get Capital PC to be recognized as a nonprofit, as an educational institution, rather than as a trade association, that it was really doing community benefit kinds of work. He was the one who followed up out of this meeting that he helped IBM pick the, because they knew him from his involvement with Capital PC, helped them and Microsoft pick the active clubs and then the presidents of those clubs, and he went around to each of a number of us with this concept that we ought to form some sort of association. And I was the only lawyer in the bunch, and so he approached me about drafting some organizational document, and that led to some very interesting discussions, because the very large groups were concerned that they were doing just fine in dealing with vendors and some of these issues. At that time, the Boston Computer Society was, boy, tens of thousands of members, quite a commercial operation with paid staff. Capital was several thousand. Houston was several thousand. The Houston Area League, Hal. North Texas, which is the Dallas area, was over 1,000. Portland was over 1,000. Seattle was several hundred. And there was some real concern that we don't want to get involved in an organization where these little 50-member groups will try to tag along with us and leverage our connection and sort of make the rest of the world reluctant to deal with us, because it's I remember I had a good friend in elementary school who we ended up not inviting to things, because every time we invited him, he had to bring his little brother, and I just didn't have room for his little brother. So there was some very real concern. So we were carefully discussing a two-level system and all that sort of thing. And this then was not Jerry's genius. Jerry Schneider had gotten us all involved in this discussion, and it was beginning to come down to a big fight between the big and the little firms, until I got a call from Jonathan Rotenberg. Jonathan had started the Boston Computer Society when he was 13 and built it up into this. It was like 25, 30,000 members. He actually was quoted in various magazines about wanting it to make it the AAA of computing use, to go national and have chapters of the Boston Computing Society all over the country. But at the height of this debate, and his representative who'd come out to the Seattle meetings was really leading the charge to not have the big groups hampered by the little groups, he called me up and said, wait a minute, and gave a line that I've used ever since. What you guys really want to start is a service organization, not a government. And a service organization, just like a user group is a service organization to its members, it doesn't govern its members' use of their computer and so forth, this association ought to be serving the user groups, not telling them what to do, and are governing them. To me, that was a breathtaking insight, and it led me to completely rewrite the organizational doc, make sure that was in the charter from the beginning. The rest of the group I was involved with, Jerry and others, immediately picked up on this and thought it was great. It finessed a serious political problem, and we got all of the big groups to join, along with lots of little groups, by repeating the mantra that was part of a 10-point program, and I don't remember the other points, but that we are a service organization, not a government. The other crucial one was, as your earlier comment indicated, that the association would never itself take positions on political issues. It might urge its members to make their own views known, and or urge its member organizations to have their members make their own views known, but the APCUG itself would not take independent political stance. And those two elements, I think, have been preserved to this very day, that it's a service organization to its member groups, and that it is, although it may encourage them to be politically active, it is not itself politically active.
You know, it's amazing when you look at how technology has changed since the mid-80s, when you drafted the charter and the bylaws, and in pretty much those same rules are governing APCUG today. And with the Boston Computer Society example, you know, in the early 80s, I was a remote member of BCS. It was just the place to be. The newsletters were worth the dues, even though I'd never make it to a meeting. But BCS, several years ago, folded its tent and came out with a press release that said, "Mission accomplished," which was implying that user groups had served their purpose. Computers were now easy to use, everyone could understand them, or whatever, that user groups were no longer needed. Do you see in this day of the internet and changing demographics and changing technology, are user groups still necessary? Are they still serving a function? And how should they or how have they evolved?
Very definitely. But they are serving two functions they were not doing, that they have evolved in a way that I think is useful and meets a growing need. And I have a third way I'd like to see them evolve. But let's go to the first two. One, they were a support group for sort of the, in some sense, the technological rabble-rousers, the technological innovators, the ones who wanted to sneak PCs into business and sneak PCs into their personal life. So they help computer spouses persuade non-computer spouses to get a second line so they could use the modem. They help persuade families to buy computers. They help persuade businesses to allow them to be brought in. And so it was really a service for the technological innovators, sort of a support group where they could all swap stories and learn how to work this stuff. They quickly sorted themselves out. I used to kid about all user groups are made up of three parts in varying proportions. There are the people who've discovered this wonderful new toy and are sort of evangelical about persuading others to use it. There are the beginners who are desperately trying to learn how to play with this new toy and learning from the people who are happy to be there and help them use it. And then there's a third group that's making money off the first two. We had a lot of participation early from local computer vendors, not just national software publishers, but the local computer store, the local computer repair guy who wanted to find out how to market his new store and maybe as an early startup couldn't afford newspaper advertising but could afford to show up at a monthly meeting and pass out brochures and business cards and so forth. Over time, the computers have been solidly entrenched in businesses, so you don't have the same sort of support for technological innovation. That mission is accomplished. The value of having a computer in an individual's hands and having software and hardware that enables them to do things, it's BCS is right. That mission is accomplished. But we have a whole raft of new starts, new beginners, that second crowd I mentioned, those who want to learn how to use one. And we've discovered, and are already out of school. So they are blue-collar workers turning into white-collar workers because of layoffs in the auto industry and the extractive industries and so forth. They are seniors who retired who want to stay in touch with their families. So there's a whole new crowd of what we would call newbies, of new users of computers who really want help with how to use them. We still have the first crowd who are the now called power users, but who want to pass on what they've learned, show off the neat tricks. And so that crowd's still around. And we still have an emerging crop of small vendors who want to figure out how to get to small markets in some convenient way. They are brand new software companies. They are web designers these days. So we still have that third crowd of entrepreneurs, quite often very different entrepreneurs than before, but same idea. How do I get to the Fortune 10,000, as they say? How do I get to the little business and the homeowner with my product when I'm not Microsoft? We also have, Microsoft continues to find this a useful outlet for leaving no computer unsold. One of the joys of working with a firm that wants to be a monopolist, wants to have a piece of every single computer activity in the world, is they continue to find user groups a useful way to reach all these new computer users among seniors and blue-collar workers turning into white-collar workers. So I think there is a continuing function, but the crowd looks very different. When it was teenagers and 20-somethings dominating the room, Now it's 40, 50, 60, 70, 80-year-olds dominating the rooms because they are the new users.
Well, that's certainly true. We can see that at any meeting. And speaking of meetings, over the years, we've just had some amazing times, some really inspirational, educational, and just a lot of fun seeing people from Bill Gates, Philippe Kahn, Peter Norton, Andy Grove, Gordon Eubanks, right down the line. A lot of stories out there. One I remember of you, I don't even know if you remember, Raleigh. We were in Silicon Valley, and we went to a Fry's. And for those who don't know, Fry's was like the mecca of computer stores, you know, hardware, software, components, anything you could have. And we all went shopping and grabbing things and all. But what does Raleigh come out with? Do you remember?
No, I probably remember the visit, but I don't remember what I bought.
You came out with a B.B. King CD.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I do remember that. Great music to listen to while you're working on a computer.
Anyone who's been to an event knows that you're always in a suit, and that's part of, you know, there's Raleigh, you can pick him out. And we did an interview with Milt Hall, and he kind of explains the Blues Brothers situation from his perspective. Tell us how that came about, you and Milt dressing in some of these funky ways for various events at our Comdex and other events.
Well, the two things I discovered early. One, I came out of a formal background, right? I went to law school, among other things, and started work at Battelle, but it's sort of senior professional researcher. So I was wearing a coat and tie to work all the time. Comfortable with a coat and tie. I love the pockets in a coat. I don't mind a tie. My neck was much thinner then, so it didn't choke me or anything like that. So it was a very comfortable outfit for me and a very practical outfit. Could carry pens and pencils and sunglasses and that sort of stuff. The other thing I discovered is that as we're busy negotiating with, remember, we're all 20-something geeks in this era, and the companies were trying to convince we were a reasonable marketing outlet for them, were very reassured to see a sprinkling of professional-looking people in among all of these geeks. If we dealt with a low level in the company, they knew that geeks sold to other geeks, and that was very easy. But if you, sometimes the budgets we were after to sponsor a user group related event, or to launch a user group discount program, or allow software to go out for evaluation, was run through a marketing crowd that was set up to sell to businesses and only kind of incidentally to deal with all these other people. So it actually was a major reassurance to them to see at least some of the people dressing like they were adults, like them, as opposed to kids like those guys down in IT who didn't have any business sense. The other thing I discovered is that we were meeting once a year and trying to maintain social relationships and some kind of cohesive element so we could work on common themes. When we only saw each other for couple 3 days and there were 300 or 400 people attending the meetings. And I remember what someone had told me visiting England in the 70s, that the Queen always wore a bright dress, so you always knew where the Queen was. It wasn't necessarily, in her case, the most formal or the fanciest dress, but you could always pick her out in the crowd. Well, I was the first president of this organization scattered all over the country with people who thankfully had voted for me without ever seeing me. And wanted some sort of common element, wanted them to know who their president was. And if you recall, sort of sending pictures around was not, turning pictures into digital was not something we did a lot in the early days. So being, you know, well, who's our president? He's the guy in the coat and tie, was a very handy way to be noticed without, for me, being really obnoxious or flamboyant. Would have been hard to compete with the guys with the propellers on their heads. So it was a way of bringing the organization together, giving it a physical symbol that would help unify us.
Well, it certainly worked. And speaking of that first board, do you remember who was on the board with you when you were president that first term?
Pretty much. And I think it's better to think of them. Some of them faded off fairly quickly, so it's more important to think of the organizations they represented. Jerry Schneider from representing Capital PC, Kat something, I'm just blanking on her name, a woman representing Chicago, Scott, that's a long time ago, Dan, Scott something representing Minnesota, which was a big group. Myself from Seattle, Steve Bass representing the Pasadena IBM PC user group was LA and Detroit never had one big overarching group. They always had a whole series of groups that were roughly the same size. And Steve was one of the earliest and one of the most active, even if not necessarily the largest. Let's see, what are we up to, five? Don, blanking on his name, guy from the Utah Blue Chips, so representing Salt Lake City, and two others. I think Jane Duvernoy may have been on early, representing like North Carolina, South Carolina, one of those places, and I'm missing one person.
Is Richard Katz in there?
No. Richard Katz got elected to the board. Someone else from San Francisco, though, I think. I think you're right. It was someone from the Bay Area. Strikes me as probably right. They're listed somewhere. I'm just blanking, but I think I gave you seven of the nine.
Yeah, that's pretty good. One of the most fun and memorable things of the whole APCUG events is our working with the vendors, and we've had a slew of some really interesting characters and some fun people and some great people to work with. Do any of the vendor representatives stand out? Do you remember anything in particular that about some of them that really stood out for you?
Well, my favorite line was that anyone who worked with user groups got promoted, married, or pregnant, usually in the appropriately socially accepted order. So a lot of the groups assigned women to us and women of marriageable age, which of course fascinated a certain number of our own user group crowd, many of whom were single men, but they were very personable marketing people, and yes, they got promoted as they did well working with us and others. They quite often attracted a soulmate, and soon after that were pregnant, and usually pregnant women just couldn't keep up with the kind of schedule that an outside marketing person would have to keep, with some exceptions. We had people who stayed with us after they were promoted, married, and pregnant. So one of the things to remember is there are a lot of very personable young women that worked with this group of largely geeky young men, made for an interesting dynamic. And some of them were, over the years were with us a long time, several, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. Also, I remember the IBM guy, I want to mention in particular, Gene Barlow, who had been assigned to work with user groups way back when. He was actually one of those that helped bring the group together in 86. And then IBM cut him off. IBM cut off the program. And so for 2 years, 87, 88, that's why Microsoft convened the 87 meeting, not IBM. IBM had stopped working with user groups and did not come back until 89. So the two things to remember about 89, three things. One, it was my very first Comdex. Two, it was when we did the official organization of APCUG as an incorporated nonprofit. And of course, you have to start with directors. So we had this wonderful meeting about who are you guys and how dare you organize without waiting for us? And we explained that how you do this. You know, you can now join us or not join us. And thankfully, everyone agreed to join. And the third thing was IBM coming back to sponsor a major meeting, knowing they were going to take all this guff for where they'd been for the past 2 years, as they in fact did. And Gene was the one who led his boss and his boss's boss through that controversial period and became a very loyal supporter of APCUG for the next many, many years, and continues to do so even as he has left IBM and now represents smaller software publishers to user groups. And he was also notable at the time in being the one person who clearly was not a young, unmarried woman.
He'll be glad to hear that. You know, Comdex keeps coming up. Our events at Comdex are so intertwined with the growth of APCUG, whether it was in Las Vegas or the Chicago Spring or Atlanta Springs. And of course, Comdex is no more. And last few years, APCUG has had their general meeting at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Do you think that we're going to evolve the user groups and APCUG will be evolving into more regional and or niche-type events such as Interop or CES for consumers, and maybe that day of one huge show like it was with Comdex in its prime, those days are over?
I think the jury's still out on that, because there is some instinct in both the industry and the user groups to love to have an excuse to get together. And it's sort of which group can kind of capture that enough that people will say, yes, that's where I want to get together, not somewhere else. Now, the industry had this wild flamboyant, we talk about the dot-com boom, but it was also a computer industry boom. And Comdex rode that to where it could have a major national event and at least a second event that was more regional on somewhere on the East Coast, sort of the East Coast. It would alternate between Chicago and Atlanta. And there was also a New York thing that would get a fair regional crowd. We have to remind ourselves that 60% of the U.S. still lives in the Eastern time zone. So a regional thing in the East Coast may be bigger than a national thing on the West Coast. But I think there's still organizations, industry still have national conventions, and there's sometimes a little fumbling around as you figure out which meeting will be declared by the sort of people voting with their feet and their dollars, the national convention. And for me, I think the mantle has passed from Comdex to CES, and I think that will continue for the next couple of years. I think there are substantial reasons to both want and think will be fun and effective a national meeting of APCUG about once a year and tying it into something where people might get employer support or at least employer time off and have some built-in geek entertainment to go with it. You know, this is not for the most part a crowd that goes to Las Vegas shows and the gambling halls and so forth. They want to, they really are interested in technology, and I think CES has nicely picked up that mantle, and I would expect that there will be reasons for the industry to go to CES and for APCUG to join them for the next several years until and unless it's replaced by another national event. But I think there is something about national that will continue to be attractive into the future.
Can we expect to see Raleigh Cole active in APCUG? Maybe not at the it's tough for George Washington to go back and have a lesser role years later, but do you see yourself working with APCUG in the future?
Well, I served on the board after being president. I felt two terms of 3 years each was enough. We really ought to rotate, so I rotated off the board. I've been the unpaid, informal general counsel available to the board for legal advice, at least while I was inside a law firm and covered, and I've contributed articles to APCUG reports, because one, I don't want them to kind of fill the newsletter with articles that should go in the individual member newsletters. They should have articles about user groups and about not about individual computer use and all that. And I could see there's still lots of people there I really enjoy hanging out with. I still love seeing the rollouts of new technology and the flamboyancy of Las Vegas. And while I don't gamble, I actually do try to go to a show or two while I'm out there. So I love that form of the entertainment. So, yeah, I hope I missed it this year for the first time since 89, and I hope I can find an employer that will give me the time off and or pay for it like I have in the past. So I hope to continue going to the annual meetings as long as there's an annual meeting, and I hope to sort of contribute by giving advice to the board and or writing for reports as they have space for me.
Well, Raleigh, I know that the advice that you gave in council during my 3 years as president was invaluable, and when you couple that with all the other years that you've been giving advice in council, it's really priceless. So beyond your presidency and your part in creating the organization, that's greatly appreciated. Today we've been speaking with Raleigh Cole, first president of APCUG. You've been listening to the Great Lakes Geek Show. Come back soon at www.greatlakesgeek.com.